2021 is just about over, so let's look back on it with our friend Derek Thompson, staff writer at The Atlantic. Derek, Happy New Year. Thanks for being here.
Happy holidays and Happy New Year.
Yeah, can you even believe that when March of 2022 rolls around, we are going to hit the two-year mark of this pandemic? Just reflect on how your perspective has changed this year from what you expected there.
It feels bizarrely like 5 seconds have elapsed and 50 years have elapsed, because so much in the world has been put on pause. It feels like time has moved very, very quickly. And at the same time, it also feels like we've been living in this pandemic now for some extraordinarily long period of time. So it's there must be some sort of fourth dimensional scale of time that represents the temporal pause and infinitude of that 2 years. But that is how I feel, if that's an even somewhat clarifying answer.
It works for me. And how do you think it's changed us as human beings, that we're still going through this and it's not over? And we can't just look forward.
Well, I think some people are trying to look forward, but I do agree that it's very difficult for a lot of people to truly, you know, see the horizon beyond which this pandemic is a part of our life. You know, I think that it's obviously changed so much. It's changed the way that tens of millions of people have worked. It's changed the physical appearance of a lot of different parts of this country. Surely there are, you know, lots of places in America that aren't wearing masks all the time, but there are lots of parts of America that are wearing masks now all the time. That certainly is an image that would have seemed rather foreign, quite literally to a lot of Americans 3 years ago. I do think that in so many ways, social and economic, and obviously from a public health standpoint, it has changed the way that we relate to each other.
It's even with strangers. You know, I was at the store the other day and someone was standing so close to me and I thought to myself, get away from me. And I thought, like, I don't want to be like that. That's not the life I want to live. And so much has changed. You're right. Now, it's related to this next question, which was about a year ago, you spoke about the political scientist Robert Putnam's book called Bowling Alone, The Collapse and Revival of American Community. And I want to remind you of what you said.
And I'm reading this book, and it's describing all of these trends that are pointing toward a withering of community. You have lower marriage rates, he found, lower church attendance, lower trust in government, falling membership in chapter-based associations.
So as you pointed out at the time, these trends were already declining before the pandemic. But the longer we suffer through this virus, Derek, do you see the problem getting even worse? And is it permanent?
I think in many ways, it's clearly gotten worse. For a lot of people, I think, as you saw the decline in all those kind of associations that I talked about a year ago, and again, it feels like 10 years ago and 10 seconds ago at the same time, as all these things were declining, two of the only communities that remained relatively sturdy were schools and work. Well, for a lot of people, those communities as well have somewhat withered. You have a lot of schools that have been remote for a great deal of the last 2 years. And then for the office, for a lot of white-collar workers, the office has essentially been distributed throughout so many houses and through so many internet-connected living rooms and bedrooms. You know, I am still nervous about the fact that America has been sort of dispersed and thrown apart by this pandemic.
And before we move on, because I do want to get to another topic, but when we get past this latest wave of Omicron, what do you see ahead? How will we be talking about COVID a year from now?
Look, I am hopeful that this disease is in its final innings as a pandemic and is entering its long stage as an endemic disease, a disease that will be with us maybe for years and years, decades and decades, but not as the sort of disease that regularly kills hundreds of thousands of people, but rather as something a little bit more like the seasonal flu, or hopefully even something a little bit more like the four coronaviruses that are considered a part of the common cold. But I am hopeful that the lower severity rates that we are beginning to see with Omicron in some places are indicative of the future of this disease, which may be less severe for the total population.
I'm speaking with Derek Thompson from The Atlantic. And Derek, let's move on to politics. The January 6th insurrection at the Capitol almost a year ago. Can you believe that? And there's a select committee in Congress investigating the origins of this insurrection. What do you think? Will it find anything significant or change anything about the future?
I am not optimistic about congressional committees discovering things that are entirely new. I think there are some ways in which the evolution of this story is even more surprising than the evolution of the story of the pandemic. If you had asked me a year ago about the Republican Party's attitude toward January 6th, I would have thought the attitude would have been very clearly to condemn anyone within any degree of separation from that horror show. And instead, you've seen something a little bit like the opposite. You've seen people, you know, prominent people on Fox News suggest that January 6th was somehow some kind of psyop. You've seen people that have been most critical of January 6th be pushed out of the Republican Party. That aspect of the story has really, really surprised me. I thought the party was going to run away from that event a lot more than it in fact has.
To that point, earlier this month, when he was on with Laura Ingraham at Fox News, former President Trump kind of glorified his mob of supporters and said it was a peaceful protest. Let's listen.
This was a absolute protest, and people are being treated very, very unfairly. Their rights are being taken away from them, and the other side is not. You take a look at what's going on with BLM and Antifa, what they did in Portland and Minneapolis and Seattle, and nothing happens. But what happened, and by the way, people were killed.
Derek, we were live on Here and Now when that insurrection at the Capitol started. We covered it live, and that was no protest. Looking back on that day, what do you remember?
I remember a huge crowd of angry people outside the Capitol trying to break into the building. I remember people taking over the main chamber. I think it's really unbelievable that we now talk about this event as if it was a purely peaceful protest, as if
a tourist
these
event.
People didn't try to break into or didn't right. in fact break into the Capitol to try to stop the democratic process. I could go on for another 5 minutes, but I assume most people hearing the attitude and the tenor of my voice understand just how enraging this is.
Well, here's how we can go on, because I know you've been tracking the former president's influence over the Republican Party at both the state and local level in the year since this happened. What have you found?
Well, look, one thing that I've been really surprised by is that it's very clear to me that the Republican Party is trying to elevate voices that are most amenable to the president's message. And there are a lot of people, including lots of prominent writers at The Atlantic, that are concerned that the Republican Party is trying to mess with the democratic process at the state level by politicizing it such that you can get various bodies, various, you know, legislatures and secretaries of state that can overturn the results of a fair election in various swing states if the results of the election seem to go against the Republican Party. And I'm surprised that this is the direction that the party has gone, even as Trump has, you know, been less of a part of our hour-to-hour lives. He still is such an enormous part of the American democratic experience.
The question is, Derek, will that faction of the Republican Party be victorious in the next elections? Will Americans buy what they're saying?
I have absolutely no idea. I think so much of this has to do with variables that frankly no one individual can control. One of my big issues this year has been that Joe Biden came into office with a lot of people proclaiming him to be some kind of new FDR, someone who could be a transformational liberal figure. But he's governed not so much like FDR as FDR's successor, Harry Truman. Harry Truman in 1946, 1948, dealt with a chaotic economy that was returning from a major crisis. That was World War II, not a pandemic. And so a lot of it has to do with, you know, how successful will Joe Biden and Democrats seem within a year of bringing under control elements that are probably outside of their control in the first place. And that really is a tough thing to predict or get a hold of.
Derek, before I let you go, this has been a pretty heavy conversation, so let's just throw you an easy one here. Biggest news story, or I don't know, your favorite news story of the year that kind of flew under the radar?
Well, I am really, really excited by the new scientific revolution that I think is underway in biotech and in clean energy. I think if you look what's happening in solar and wind energy, look at what's happening in geothermal energy, and then you direct your enthusiastic attention to what's happening in synthetic mRNA technology, not just vaccines for COVID, but potential vaccines for things like individual cancers and malaria. This is an extraordinarily exciting time for science, and that's where I'm very interested in devoting a lot of my attention the next year.
And Derek Thompson, we look forward to talking to you about that in the next year. Staff writer at The Atlantic, thanks as always. Happy New Year to you.
Thank you. Happy New Year.